This week's show is supported by Granola, the AI note taker. And this is a tool I use myself every single day. As a coach or advisor, Granola gives you complete flexibility in how you stay compliant, inform your clients, and handle consent. There's no bot joining the call, just a quiet, unobtrusive capture running on your device in the background. It works across everything: Zoom, Riverside, Google Meet, Squadcast, and on your own phone for in-person sessions too. The real superpower is querying everything across all the calls you've ever recorded, drilling down into a single client's entire history in seconds, or just asking a question about the call you had yesterday. You can set up your own custom reports, spot patterns across your practice, and connect it to all your favorite tools: Notion, HubSpot, Zapier, and much, much more. And this is not just a note taker, it's a second brain for your practice. And thanks to the nice people at Granola, if you use the link go.granola.ai/Bob, they'll extend your 1 week trial to a full month. That's go.granola.ai/Bob.
Welcome to Building Your Leader Brand. Today on the show, Bob is speaking with Ruby Sweeney.
Hi there, and welcome back to Building Your Leader Brand. My name's Bob Gentle, and every week I meet incredible people who share their secrets to building, marketing, and monetizing their expertise and the mindset you need for your business to grow and thrive. Goodness me, I can't remember my own intro. If you're new to the show, then take a second to subscribe. Whatever device that is in your hand, get to know it. It's either going to be a plus icon, a follow icon, or some other variant of that. Don't forget as well, you can download the Personal Brand Business Roadmap. It's everything you need to start, scale, or fix your expert business. Now, I'm really looking forward to today's conversation, and I know I say that a lot, but I've been trying to get today's guest on the show what feels like forever, for a very good reason. There is nothing speaks authority like having your own event. So to help me explore this, Ruby Sweeney, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks for having me on the show. It has been a while.
Yes, I think it's probably around a year at least.
At least, yeah. But closer to Bob, two, I would say.
Bob likes busy people. Nothing speaks of quality quite like somebody who never has time to speak to me.
Love it. Love it. You need that on a t-shirt. Bob likes busy people.
So the reason I wanted to speak to you is events for me are really, they sit at the heart of authority. People who host events, people who are known for bringing people together, connectors. Mm-hmm. It seems to be in the world that all opportunity flows through connectors, and connectors with authority get great opportunities. Mm-hmm. And this is really what I want to focus on, is how can we, as people in the expert space, start to embrace and think about events as part of our business ecosystem, but get it right. Yeah. So for the listener who's meeting you for the first time, it's maybe worth letting you introduce yourself. So if you were introducing yourself for the first time, how would you do that?
So I would share that I am a conference and events consultant, specialist, manager, and I've been in events for over 20 years. So my experience comes from a variety of places, starting off in hospitality, through venues, and then into fully into the event space. I've been running my own business, the Events Hub, for close to 14 years. And I am passionate about events, and we're going to go into this in more detail in a moment. However, recently I have been niching into the tech innovation and scale-up space. And again, we'll talk about that and explore that in a moment as well, Bob. So events is my world. I live and breathe it. And there's nothing like it.
Yeah, I've seen you talking about space events quite a lot recently. It's very interesting.
Very exciting as well. Yeah.
So first off, for the listener, when you said 14, it sounded a lot like 40. So I'm just going to clarify for that for the listener. You haven't been running your business for 40 years. Frankly, Bob suspects you need a time machine for that one.
Definitely 14, running my own business. Yeah.
So events have a bit of a reputation within the expert space for sometimes being the thing that can sink a business. They can be very expensive white elephants, but at the same time, they can be the thing that launches a business. And from your perspective, as somebody whose job it is to get this done right, like a lot of experts, when you see somebody putting on an event, you could think, that's a car crash waiting to happen. What does that look like?
The point where an event looks like things might be going pear-shaped is usually, it can be the day of the event, but often by the time you get to the day of the event, 99% of the work is done. Whether it's done right or not is, you know, anyone's guess, but events have to start with a strategy-first approach. And this is where so many people get events wrong, whether it's CEOs, founders, MDs, boards, leadership teams, freelancers, specialists, marketers. Where we are all getting it wrong is we think of events as tactics. We don't give events a seat at the table when it comes to strategizing about a business or a plan or a marketing strategy. Often events sit within the marketing space, so they will be managed by a marketing manager or a CMO. And therefore, the strategy for events also sits with marketing. And my belief, and also the reason why I started my business, was that not everybody needs an event manager in-house. Not everybody needs an event team. My business exists because we provide event management, event solutions, event consultancy to clients who do not need us on a full-time basis. And so when you have access to experts who know events inside out and you use them, the best way that you can get extra added or even measurable value out of them is to use them in that strategic way when a strategy is being set, whether it's the start of the year or the financial year or every quarter or whatever. That's where things go wrong with events, is that it's not strategic enough and everybody thinks of events as strategy. So like that elevator pitch when I started the podcast here, when I say to someone, I'm an event manager, I work in events, people just think tactics. They think venues, speakers, hotels, catering. They do not think about strategy. And so one of my missions, or my main mission really, is to get people thinking about events from a strategy first perspective. And that's where things go wrong, because when you get to an event and it's all falling apart, you're already too late. That's because you're on the back foot, you're firefighting. Things haven't been thought through properly, or somebody hasn't owned that event. And a big part of events is also ownership. And it's also this question of, you know, where do events sit? Who owns events? Is it operations? Is it business development? Is it marketing? So these things can feel uncomfortable because we haven't done them before. But I feel it's really important to go through those questions, that process, to really dig deep into what we want events to do for our business and how we measure that success or return on investment.
I think that's an important component, because I probably, if I were to superficially think, you know what I'm going to do, I'm going to do an event, I will think of two things. I will think of money and I will think of probably clout. Those are my two strategic goals. And that's strategically very, very weak. If you were sitting across the table from, let's say, somebody in the expert space, because it's simpler, it's clearer, and they said, these are my goals.
Yeah.
What blind spots would you be bringing to their attention?
I'd be sitting down from an events perspective, you mean, Bob?
Yeah. Well, within the potential for that event, within their broader business strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The sorts of things that I ask are, what is your business strategy? What are the objectives that you are setting out to achieve? What outcomes do you want for your business? This is even before we get to the discussion about events. It's about knowing where that organization, that company, that business is heading. And we're all guilty of this. We look at a business and different elements, different departments, different sections of it as separate. And we need to understand that it's all one. Mm. At the end of the day, it is all one. So whether it's marketing, operations, finance, events, it's all one. So therefore, when you look at something tactically and not understand the strategy or understand what it is that you're working towards, or you don't share that as a CEO or as an MD or a founder or a head of department, that's where things go wrong, because not communicating what the clear reasons for doing something are, it's a classic mistake that happens in marketing and ultimately in events as well. So understanding what the business is there to achieve is key. And then understanding what we want out of events is also key. And what I advise often is to look at that within the activities, and then, you know, as you work through the process within the business activities, the business calendar, and how events are impacted by the things going on in the business throughout the year, or vice versa. What are the big campaigns? What are the conferences or the exhibitions that we must be at? And again, when you look at events, it's not just a case of hosting or attending. I've got a list, you know, a dozen different ways that you can engage with events. So it doesn't necessarily have to be, particularly if it's your first venture into events, you don't have to go straight from doing nothing. Say, for example, you're a scale-up business and you want to use events as one of these key ways of business development, for example, then what's really important is to understand that we are working towards something, and therefore that big step of hosting an event doesn't necessarily have to be how we achieve that goal. It could be that we partner, or it could be that we speak at something, or we sponsor an element, not necessarily as a key sponsor, but it's about the different ways that you can engage with events before you then take that even bigger step of hosting something. So there are always options, and it's always outcomes focused. It's what is it we're trying to achieve? And I've always asked this question from day one of having my business is, what is this event going to help you to achieve? And that needs to be a holistic question. That's not just a in an event silo kind of question. It's what are we doing here as a business as a whole?
I think one of the things that I always encourage people to think of is simplicity first.
Absolutely, yeah.
And in the event space, there's a, as you kind of indicated, there's a spectrum that goes from lunch all the way through to international conference.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to hear from you, what are some of the most elegant, simple things that you've ever seen people do which really check those boxes of building authority, building credibility, perhaps becoming a connector in a very visible way, but it's actually very simple and elegant?
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Bob, about the whole simplicity thing. And my advice is always start small, but start with a solid foundation. So don't take huge amounts of risk. Start with something, say a coffee meeting, and get 10, 15 key people around a table and put on some coffee and breakfast and have a round table. Talk about, discuss kind of, you know, Chatham House rules style, something that could be either a challenge someone in the room is having or something topical, and make it something that is more than just the casual surface level chit chat. You're going, you know, you're going an inch wide and then a mile deep. That kind of idea is that you take a theme, you take a problem or a challenge, and you just kind of go deeper with it. So in that way, you're building trust, you're building relationships, you're building credibility, and you're starting really simply. But as the host, what that can do for positioning and brand is fantastic. If you've got a room of 15 key leaders, that would completely revolutionize those relationships. So simply being the host or the organizer of something like that is a great place to start. Take a subject, take a topic, discuss it, and be the host of that morning or afternoon event.
I absolutely echo that. I was invited to speak at a conference in, I'm not going to say where it was, but it was on the other side of the world. And I was really thinking about going, and somebody said to me, you know, this is a really, really small event. And I would have gone anyway. But what was interesting was how the owner of that event leveraged it completely disproportionately in terms of the impact that he was having. And I think it's really emphasizing what you were saying there is a small event is only necessarily small for the people who are in the room.
Yeah.
You can use that event to disproportionate effect.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can totally leverage that. And with everything else that if you've got the time to be strategic, and you've allowed yourself the time to be strategic, I should say, then the way you can work that pre, during, and after, I always look at events as pre, during, after, how you can leverage that. We have social media, we have AI, we have so many tools at our disposition that will help us to leverage that entirely. But at the same time, like you say, you get invited to something, and that's essentially us reacting to a request to speak or host or sponsor or support something. And are we asking the right questions? Are we understanding our motivations for going? What is it going to do for me or me and my business? So always asking those questions of ourselves with a plan in mind, with an event strategy. So what I advise my clients to do is make sure that you've got, even if it's a one-page strategy, an idea of what you want events to do for you over a set period of time, and have it so that, you know, if we host something, these are the outcomes we'd like to see. We sponsor it, this is what we'd like to see. We speak at something, you know, or we have a booth or a stand at something. So really understanding our motivations before we're packing our bags and going away to something is really knowing why we're doing something in the first place, and not just what can I get out of it, but also what am I going to give to the hosts and the organizers as well. What can I provide to the stakeholders or the people in the room? So it does take a lot of thinking, and it can be uncomfortable because we're probably not doing it in the right way when it comes to events.
So there's two areas I'd like to maybe play with. The first one is venue. Well, actually, before I get to venue, I'd maybe like to spend a little bit of time, because virtual events have become almost a rotten low-hanging fruit. It becomes so easy to do a virtual event that, how would I put this? They've become the line of least resistance, and the line of least resistance is never a good thing. It's never the adventurous, courageous choice, and it tends to be the courageous choices that see success. But from your perspective, as somebody who organizes events, what are the value differences between an in-person versus a virtual event?
Yeah. So we still run in online events for clients. So we do global conferences for clients who have their, I'll not name the company, but they have their country leaders spread across geographies. So we do a UK and Europe conference online, then we do Asia Pac, and then we do North America or the Americas. So we do that, and then we also do monthly webinars for clients, and then I have one client who still does hybrid events. Remember those? So we do a hybrid AGM for them once a year. So I'm still a believer in virtual events. I still consume virtual events. So things like masterclasses, coaching, group events, you know, those kind of things, I will still join because I feel that virtual events maybe sit higher up the funnel for certain businesses, certain ecosystems, certain organizations. So one of our clients are in the publishing space, and what's great for them is that they bring together 400, 500, 600 people, maybe around about once a month, online from all corners of the world, completely inclusive event because it's the publishing space. You might have early careers researchers or librarians or people who don't have huge budgets to travel to events where they come together and hear about certain topics in the sector. So I'm a big believer in virtual events still having a place, but not necessarily the place that they may have had a few years ago. The other thing about virtual events is that the content that you produce from a virtual event or a masterclass or a webinar can be repurposed and used again, which is great. And that's also fantastic for things like social media or websites or email campaigns or whatever. And ensuring that we use those within our funnels or within our sales process or marketing process is helpful. The differences are that virtual events, particularly for smaller organizations or those with smaller budgets, can be helpful in the sense that you're not having to pay for venues and catering and hosting and all the things that you need when it comes to an in-person event. However, you almost kind of have to, you know, read the room and understand what are the motivations for your audience or your partners or your stakeholders, and also what is it that they're asking for? If they're asking to be in physical spaces with their peers, then are you providing that in some shape or form? Or are they quite happy jumping onto a webinar, listening for an hour during their day and then going back to their day job? So understanding the motivations of our audience is really important. And so in that sense, virtual can be helpful. And then in other comparisons, people just want to get in the room and they want to get face to face with one another because Teams, you know, Teams, Zoom, Google Meet, whatever, we're using them for meetings all throughout the working day. And you do get screen fatigue and you do want to step away from that and go to a physical space to meet people. And I was at a space conference last week and I bumped into a few people that some of them I did know, some of them I didn't know. But that serendipity that you get when you're in a physical space doesn't necessarily happen anymore in the virtual space. It may have happened during COVID when we were, you know, playing with all these online platforms. So it's about understanding what budgets you are playing with, because budget is a big part, what motivations the people that you're serving have when it comes to events. But also, if you put on something that's pretty dire in person, are people going to stick around? Probably not. I go to things and I think, oh, do you know what? This is not for me. And I will physically leave an event, which I would probably wouldn't have done before COVID. I probably would have been too nice to, I would have just sat there and done something or just sat there and not ruffled any feathers. But I think when we were going through the pandemic and we went on to virtual events, we were able to just click and leave something that wasn't quite for us. That's kind of bled into the physical space, I think. And so there is no space for mediocrity when it comes to in-person events. So we see not so great in-person events, maybe not doing so well or downsizing or completely disappearing. And online reputation of these events is really important as well. Now people are talking about, oh, that event wasn't what it used to be, or it was like this now. Or I think it was South by Southwest London got quite a bad rap this year and things like that. So it's challenging for events organizers. We need to provide motivations for people to come, and we need to ensure that we're managing expectations as well. And expectations generally for in-person are high. They're higher probably than they used to be. So events that we put together need to be good quality. And one of the key things people ask time and time and time again, and interestingly now are asking further in advance, is who else is going to be in the room? Because that's so important. So that's something that I would encourage listeners and viewers to do, is to ensure that you provide guidance or ideas, or if you are sharing lists, then you plan to provide that earlier than you think, because people want to set up meetings, people want to reach out on LinkedIn, people want to check out these companies on their websites and socials. So very important to ensure that you have a compelling event through and through. So those would be my tips. And I guess those comparisons.
Yeah. And those are the kind of details that add a lot of value if you can.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There was a lot to pick out there, most of which my memory is rubbish, so I've forgotten. But what I do want to understand from your perspective is I've got two choices. I can do it on my own and wing it, or I can bring in an event manager.
Yeah.
And from your, if I'm looking to hire a Ruby Sweeney, how small is too small for you to really be involved in?
I would answer that as, again, I would want to understand where your business is going, or what your organization is, you know, what are we trying to achieve here? What's the plan?
I think actually in many respects, it's a silly question, because small does not equate to low value.
It doesn't. No, so exactly.
I think that was a false premise.
So small can be a 5-person meeting, but really, really, you know, high stakes. And it could be that we need to go out and find these, you know, high stake CEOs or somebody who's really well regarded or respected, or a really respected leader, whoever that might be. So there is no such thing as too small. And I also get asked the question, what types of events? So I'll kind of answer that as one, but it's really about what are you striving to do as a business or as an individual, and what would be your motivation for outsourcing this event? Because often when we come into maybe medium-sized organizations, larger organizations, we get asked that more because they already have resources, they already have staff, they have teams that events could be shared around. And one of my bigger things, which I mentioned before, was ownership. It's who is owning this? Because that is ultimately a driver of success or failure of an event as well, is really that ownership, that responsibility and accountability. And so when it comes to outsourcing, I want to understand what added value you're looking for when it comes to bringing me in. And when it comes to types of events. Typically, we do conferences and summits, and we'll help clients with webinars, online events, attendance at industry trade shows. So we're experienced at doing that. So we want to do more of that because we have so much to share from our experiences. So when it comes to outsourcing, really, I think it's important to have clarity of what you expect that relationship to look like and why you're bringing somebody external in the first place. And again, a thing going back to my point about strategy and tactics is that bringing in an events person, you really want to understand what their skill sets are. Are they strategic or are they more focused on just getting things done? Yeah. So that's also really important, is who am I bringing in and what are their skills? And for me, my shift in the last couple of years has absolutely been in that positioning of, you know, I want to be that advisor, that consultant. Yes, of course, I can make things happen, but really, I want to be helping you to drive your business organization forward with my experience of events from a strategic perspective on that approach.
So one of the reasons I really wanted to speak to you is, if I ask anyone in my network, who should I get involved if I'm looking to put on an event? You are the answer to that question. And whenever I see that happen, my radar starts pinging because something's working. And what I find most of the time is opportunity can come into a business through one of four doors. It either comes in through ads, or it comes in through outbound sales, or it comes in through content and content marketing. And in that, I include search performance. Yeah. Or it can come in through relationships and our network.
Yeah.
What does that mix look like for you?
So the things I can eliminate immediately are ads.
I was
content. Absolutely. Content management, because I know I'm not essentially that great at being consistent at that. And I'm an open book. So I'll say I'm not very good at that, or I just don't do that. So again, you know, as outright, we don't do that. Content management, certain things that we don't do, but then I'm very consistent and visible on LinkedIn. So yeah, that could potentially be my answer to that. And then relationships and strategic partnerships are humongous for me. Yeah. So they are the biggest driver. And thank you for sharing that, because that is where I've wanted to get to. That is a point that I have wanted to get to, is I want my name to be mentioned in rooms where I'm not, because I am known for this one thing. So there were times when I did spread myself thin trying to do lots of different things, but I've refocused and gone, this is exactly what I do. And like I said, yes, I can make events happen with my eyes shut, but the thing that really excites me now is seeing CEOs and founders and CMOs and heads of marketing and so on really driving events because of my take on how we should be approaching events in the first instance before we dive into logistics, operations, booking venues and speakers and so on. So yeah, without a doubt, it's relationships and strategic partnerships.
I think one of the things that I know to be 100% true is just being good at what you do is insufficient to build a business. And being the best kept secret is where businesses go to die. And I'm curious, do you have any intentional practices around cultivating and maintaining your network? Is there anything you do to be intentional around that? Or is it simply natural and part of what you do?
I've worked really hard on myself the last couple of years, in the sense that my personal development, my personal growth. And prior to that, I worked really hard, just working hard and not really having something that I would even call a business. It was almost like a charity, Bob. What I had was, genuinely, I'd work really hard. I'd work twice as hard as the next person. My husband would say, you've got nothing to show for it because you worked really hard and what you're charging doesn't match up to that. So I went through a journey personally to become the person that you see now. And me 6-10 years ago, if you had invited me onto a podcast, I would have scarpered. Whereas now I've become so comfortable. I'm not uncomfortable right now, but I had to go through that process of, you know, taking uncomfortable action. And that feeling of being uncomfortable, that feeling of being out of my comfort zone, to get to being the person that I am now. So when it comes to a strategy for the way I maintain relationships, It genuinely, without sounding really corny, is I am being true to myself. I am being myself and me, you know, the person that I am now, that is open, but that is also sociable, that is warm, also professional. And really, it's taken a lot of work. And I think you get to a point, you think I've arrived, but no, you constantly have to do that work. And I don't think you ever arrive. I think Alex Hormozi or somebody has said, you know, you don't ever arrive. And if you have, you're dead. Yeah. You are constantly working on something, or you are constantly leveling up or growing in some way. And for me, my growth is not necessarily about growing the business. In fact, I've done the opposite of the business in the last couple of years, is I've kind of scaled things down. And going back to the simplicity thing as well, there is a stage in life where you want things to be simpler. You don't want to be making things more complicated for yourself. So the way I approach a lot of things is simpler than they used to be. It's less work as well, because I don't want to make extra work for myself. And it's about being as authentically me as possible without sounding really cheesy.
Yeah. No, I think it's interesting. I think a lot of people, a lot of business owners in particular, have this egotistical thing that I've got a business, therefore I am accomplished, therefore my transformation is complete.
Yeah.
And like you, if you'd parachuted me into the business I run today, even 5 years ago, I would have destroyed it overnight, because I wouldn't have had the courage required to maintain it at the level that I do. And I remember it's going back to one of my very first podcast interviews. It was at the stage where people started to pitch themselves to the podcast. And I've got a very itchy delete finger, because I get pitched probably once or twice every single day. And this pitch came in, and it was somebody who was making soap at home. And my instinct was, soap at home, that's a bargain bucket business. But she turned this into a $20 million business.
Wow, okay.
What's that all about? What's she done that's different from every other person that's made soap at home?
Yeah.
And when I asked her about this, her response was, your business will only grow when you grow. And I found this to be universally the case. And a lot of people will resist that very fiercely. They'll say discomfort is something they will actively avoid.
Yeah.
Imposter syndrome is something they will actively avoid. And everything worth having is on the other side of the doors with scary written on them.
And
it requires a lot of humility to go through those doors. And this is what I'm hearing has led to success.
Yeah, it really does. And it is scary and it's frightening. But what's really, it is like working the muscle, isn't it? The more you do it, the less uncomfortable it is. And you get then to a point where you actually enjoy it. I mean, even today, I was looking forward to sitting down with a cup of tea and doing this. And same as you, if I rewound a few years, I would have avoided anything that involved. I mean, I hated the sound of my voice on recordings, on voice notes and all of these things. And a lot of these insecurities, they do come from way back, and you have to work through those as well. But when you're a business owner, again, it's all one. You can't separate those things out. And so you have to be comfortable with seeing your face plastered everywhere, or your voice, or listening to your voice on voice notes or recordings or podcasts, and being okay with that. And one of the things that I always say is give yourself some grace. Mm. Give yourself some, be kind to yourself, speak to yourself in kind words. And what is that voice in your head saying about you? And that's a lot of stuff that I think we also need to work through is that as well. And for me, it's been a big journey because I have children as well. So I'm almost kind of, I'm growing, I'm learning, I'm being coached. And then I'm also coaching my girls to a certain degree as well. So it's that ripple effect of what you are learning, who you are becoming, and then what you are able to spread as well. So yeah, that's an important philosophy for me.
I think that's a wonderful place to pivot or segue into the second part of our conversation, which I've begun calling the three amplifiers. Three things people can do to make themselves bigger, better, more confident. Anything people can do to to help themselves move forwards in one way or another. Sometimes it's a book, sometimes it's a tactic, sometimes it's a mental model, sometimes it's just your favorite podcast. It doesn't matter. Maybe it's just going for a walk. Do you have three things for us?
I do. And we spoke about personal development. And I, up until 2018, 2019, I didn't even know it was a thing. Then I realized that it was a thing. It was a very big thing, a very big industry.
The biggest.
And biggest industry, exactly. Isn't it $1 billion a day now, plus the sort of self-learning, self-development industry, right? So personal development is essential. And whatever that needs to look like for you, whether it's books, audiobooks, whether it's podcasts or coaching or sessions, one-to-one, group, whatever. But it's so important to work on yourself and reflect on yourself and ultimately understand what is it that you want. And I've spoken about this on a couple of other podcasts, but came across this in a couple of other places, and I can't remember them to quote them, but looking at your life and business, because again, they're all one, in different seasons. So for me, there was a point a couple of years ago, we had a lot of growth during and post-pandemic. And then probably just under 2 years ago, things fell off a bit of a cliff, both as kind of more of a universal thing. You know, there was weird stuff going on in the world, but also things that I know that I neglected or didn't do, whether it was pipeline or something else. Anyway, so for me, bringing all of that back to what is it that I want? What is it that I need in this season of my life? And what do those around me need from me? So I mentioned I have children, my children in primary school. So my challenges, what my children need from me, what my family needs at this stage of life is very different from someone who either doesn't have children or somebody has babies or somebody has older children or children have flown the nest. So understanding what your life needs from you in seasons is really helpful, because then you set yourself up for what it is that you want in that particular season with a view of what future seasons could or might look like for you. And that helps you to plan and prepare and also be realistic about the expectations of yourself, your business, and your life at that moment in time. So personal development and looking at my life in seasons is one of them.
I think the reason I love that is it's the antidote to comparison. It's in, because we need to take a season into account. I have complete freedom, complete calendar autonomy, and it's just not fair for somebody else to compare themselves to what I can do just now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And and similarly, there'll be somebody whose business is in a season where, I'm rambling now. I 100% agree with you. I think it's so important, and it allows you to be kinder to yourself.
It does. And when you're not comparing yourself to others, you are allowing yourself to flourish and thrive. And then, you do you. Let other people do their thing as well, because we all have our own things going on. So for me, this season of my life, and actually it helps me to focus on me, my life, my home, my children. Mm. And it's also very freeing. So that's really good for me. So seasons of life, personal development is one.
So amplifier number two.
Amplifier number two is your health and your nutrition come first. So health, nutrition, exercise. I didn't go to the gym for about a year and a half. I started back again at the start of the year. And oh my goodness, those being non-negotiables for me have been a big game changer, and how they impact your mindset as well. And I think I was watching a Mel Robbins thing this morning where she was talking about the number one thing that all the experts that have come onto her podcast in however many years have said, the number one thing is exercise. You have to move your body. And I am such a big believer of that, is that focus. And once again, it's that focus on yourself, because how you feel about yourself, how you project yourself, that's all part of your brand as well. That's all part of how you come across in business. So looking after your health, moving your body, essential both physically and mentally and emotionally and spiritually. So that is my amplifier number two, short and sharp.
I'm feeling vaguely schooled there. I think it was one thing I'm very aware I need to do a lot more of. Living in a flat on the third floor, albeit a very nice flat, it's a long way down to street level to do anything.
Yeah, I can imagine.
There's all kinds of reasons not to do that. So
yeah. Non-negotiable.
I'm going to consider myself schooled.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't make any excuses. Just go and do it. So that's my number two. And then number three is know the things that you, again, non-negotiables, should or must do for yourself that help you to switch off from the day-to-day. So that's probably a bit long-winded, but for me, it's books. It's reading, it's fiction, fantasy, you know, that sort of stuff. For others, it could be going out for a run or, you know, doing a sport or something. So it's so important to have something to switch off with, or traveling or whatever. I came back from a holiday a couple of weeks ago. I thought, oh my gosh, we need to do this more often. Or we say that every year, we go away once a year, come back and go, we need to do this more throughout the year, and then we don't. But it's so important to have something that helps you switch off your brain from the day-to-day and you know, all the business stuff. Because I can never switch off from the business ideas and the creativity and, oh, I need, you know, I should maybe try this, or I must do that, or I haven't done that yet. So that one thing, or that group of things that help you to switch off and just appreciate life, is essential.
I couldn't echo that more powerfully, because I think you've been running your own business 14 years. For me, it's closer to 25.
Wow.
And that has an effect on you over time.
Yes.
Where the business is all consuming, because your well-being is entirely dependent on it. And you can actually get to the point where there's almost PTSD when you're not working. And having something to occupy your mind just is self-indulgent. For a lot of people, you'd say, well, that is just self-indulgent. But for a business owner, it's essential for your ongoing well-being.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, totally agree.
So if people are thinking they'd like a little bit of Ruby Sweeney in their life, what's the best way for them to do that? How can they get into your world?
Yep, so they can contact me on LinkedIn. I'm very active and easy to find, and I'm sure Bob, you'll be sharing links after this as well. And I am also, my website is eventshub.com, so you can also contact us through there as well. LinkedIn's probably the first place to start, and then we can go from there.
Well, I have learned a lot. And what was frustrating with these interviews is you get to the end of the interview and you think, now I feel really well prepared for an interview. So we must do this again. We've never really had the opportunity to spend much time together, and it's been really good fun, really educational, for me at least.
Well,
so thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on, and I will be seeing you soon for a cup of coffee.
Yes.
Or thereabouts.
Literally just down the road. We should really do this.
We really should. We really should. This is a stake in the ground. We're going to make it happen.
Yes. Maybe at my event. Who knows?
Well, we'll definitely have a chat about that.
So that does bring us to the end of another episode. Thank you at home for listening. And if you have enjoyed this, I would welcome you to leave a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts. It's 5, like the fingers on your hand. And if you can't remember the number, just count them and don't get it wrong. Again, if you did enjoy this, you will love the Personal Brand Business Roadmap. It's everything you need to scale your business. It's 100% free as a gift from me. Just visit the link in the show notes or click the link in the show notes. Yeah. Amplifyme.agency/roadmap. That's what I was looking for. Thanks again, home, and Ruby, thank you for your time.